It is a fact. Media and marketing affect culture. Today, I talked to media and communications expert, Kamala Boyd, about her journey in public relations and her thoughts about what organizations need to do to positively affect culture through effective communication.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
We explore topics such as HBCU excellence, Walmart's blunder with Juneteenth products, and the recent tragedy in Uvalde, Texas. Enjoy our conversation and see the show notes for more information about Kamala Boyd. As always, make sure you subscribe to the Empowerment Zone podcast and give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. You just have so much to offer. You've had an incredible professional career, and then you are an expert in communications. And, you know, yesterday we had a tragedy in Texas with the shooting in a school in South Texas, and it really hurts my heart, and I'm sure it hurts yours as well, in trying to figure out how do you create communications tools to try to touch people to make change in our culture so those types of events won't happen. But we'll talk a little bit later about that. But before we get into that, can you tell me how did you get into communications, and what is your area of expertise in communication?
Well, I'd like to think that communications for me was a natural start. I was an avid reader as a child and a talker. I always was in trouble for talking. So
me too.
avid reader and a talker. And a church girl. So church folk, you know, I was always around people interacting. So those three combinations, I think, gave me a platform unknowingly to be a communicator and an effective communicator. Now, I also have some other things in my background, my father's profession, some other stuff that probably lends to being effective in communicating. My father is a minister. Okay. So I grew up with clear communication. Mm-hmm. And confidence to be able to communicate clearly. Mm-hmm. So that is the foundation for who I have become professionally. Mm-hmm. But I'm also that personally. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky enough to be able to have that skill all around. I did not go to college initially to be in public relations or journalism or communications. Hmm. I left high school with a thought that I was going to be a cardiologist. Hmm. I could not get through my freshman year of science classes, nor calculus. So more power to them. What little did I know that I would end up working for the top doc in the nation.
Wow.
At one point, and also now representing 3,000 family physicians here in Georgia and their communications efforts. So never belittle what you didn't accomplish. Maybe somewhere along the way, it's going to touch a crossover. And I say that now with some years of experience and some successes, some failures. I clearly have been able to still survive, despite the fact that I did not get through my freshman year and as a pre-med major.
So top doc, who's that?
The top doc is Dr. David Satcher, and I had the privilege of working for him at the Satcher Health Leadership Institute now nearly about a decade ago. So that was still mid-career for me. I know I look good, I look young, but that was mid-career for me. And that was quite a privilege to be there. And as he developed the Institute, and now the Institute has gone on to do great things. I was there in the early stages and one of the original employees, but he's gone on to hire more and they're doing more. And I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Satcher and some of the leadership skills that he taught me and our staff, and just some of the human relational skills that I learned in his office.
I'm curious. What was it like working with Dr. Satcher? And secondly, to follow up on your statement, what leadership skills and relationship skills did you feel like he taught you as you were working for him?
Well, now it's been about 10 years, so I want to keep that in perspective. Mm-hmm. And he has had a number of employees, given the wide variety of things that areas of medicine that he's worked in and led. So my experience with him was that it was insightful. There was always a great story. There was always a lesson to be learned in some way or another. And also compassion and understanding and cultural competence in medicine was something that at Morehouse School of Medicine does that anyway. But he allowed us to learn just those tidbits. I'm not a physician, so some of the clinical stuff had was, you know, over our heads many times, but just understanding people and that in treating people, we got to make sure when we talk to folk who look like us, that just telling them to make sure they walk and eat right and all those kind of things are so important in our community. But we also have to make sure those things are available as far when I say available, meaning the grocery store has fresh vegetables.
Yes.
Water doesn't have lead in it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of things that I learned not only from Dr. Satcher, but Morehouse School of Medicine. Now, in terms of leadership, given the fact that he was a significant and still is a significant figure, I can't, that would be a whole nother show. But, and I think there are probably some other people that worked for him that could probably give even more in depth. But what I will tell you that one portion that I learned from him was to be accountable in your work, and that people have to trust their leaders and trust their decision making. And also the leader has to be able to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always willing to take hires on and take new employees on to develop them. And I think in our community, sometimes we don't always want to take other, we don't want the new folk. We're holding on to a seat so long that sometimes our community wants to shy away from that. But that was something that I did not see with him. And I was actually relatively young. So the door was open for me to do a number of great things. I've gone on to do so much more since then. So that is a bright spot in my career, but there's been much more.
So
he actually gave me that springboard.
So tell me about other work I was able to do.
I literally left there and took a year or so, and I went really across the street to Clark Atlanta University. So Clark Atlanta had a need to develop their digital presence, and my expertise, you just asked me about that, but Clark Atlanta's need to develop a digital presence and to improve that was something that was on the map for them to finally complete. And I was privileged enough to have a team and be brought to Clark Atlanta or hired or there initially as a consultant to change the way the school was branded. Mm-hmm. And over a period of time, the team, we did it effectively. Communications work is not done alone. It's not done in a silo. It's not done just sitting in a corner. It's usually done with other minds who think just as creatively and just as openly. And places like a college or a university where the target audience is 18 to 21. And the base, the what you're essentially trying to do is convince people to come to school at that school. One of many messages. You've got giving a number of other things, but one message is we want you to come here. Mm-hmm. We want you to bring your money here. And so in understanding that the branding and the effectiveness of probably some of the social platforms had to be attractive enough to attract an 18 to 21 year old, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because they are an evolving group. And those are the techies. So you couldn't have a site that wasn't working properly, or social media needed to kind of reflect that. And we were able to accomplish that. And they're still accomplishing that. I think the Atlanta University Center is probably the second to Florida A&M.
I'm an alum of Clark Atlanta University. Don't mess with us.
Second to Florida, but it is the epicenter of academic excellence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we should never overlook all the things that are occurring in Southwest Atlanta. And I'm just happy that I was one of many, 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 many talented employees, consultants, faculty members who have influenced students, taught students, and actually kept the Atlanta University Center relative. So I don't think of myself as just something that was so unique. And that's the great part about the Atlanta University Center. People are just like, there's a bunch of us. Yeah.
Yes.
It's great sitting down with minds that are alike. You're not the only one. And I think that keeps you in check, keeps your ego in check, which is so another part of having a healthy career.
So true. The Atlanta University Center is a consortium of historically Black colleges and universities in Atlanta. It's the largest consortium of HBCUs in the country and the world, consisting of Clark Atlanta University, Morehouse College, Spelman College, the Morehouse School of Medicine, the Interdenominational Theological Center, and Morris Brown College. And it's so great to be a product of the Atlanta University Center for me, and also being able to work there as well. And like you said, it's African Americans with all types of skills and talents that just elevate you. You're not the only one. Like, some of us come from environments where we feel like we're the only one. Well, that is the center of education in terms of historically Black colleges and universities. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, looking at communication, you stated that, you know, it's just not a one-person show. It takes relationships. It's a group effort. I don't care what field you are in, you need communications, right? No matter what the sector is, you know, one of the critiques we hear a lot about the Democratic Party in particular is that they don't communicate their stories well, right? We hear the critique about, you know, schools, like you just stated, didn't have good communications areas. What is your take on communications? How do you develop a great communication strategy in terms of being an institution or individual professionals? And how do you, let's deal with that first, and then I'll ask my follow-up question. Thank you.
Let's say this though, the schools all had some sort of effective communications. What the challenge was with many universities and not just HBCUs was how to evolve that into a digital strategy.
Right,
Of the time, a communication strategy, at least until the last 25 years, involved no digital. So strategy, crisis, all that was all on paper. You're talking to news reporters, and it's a little more technical. So your digital strategy is now a part of your overall communication strategy. Mm-hmm. And you had to have people at the table really that understand that and mm-hmm. understand technology and the fact that technology changes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a press release is going to look like a press release, but now a press release can be disseminated quickly. Mm-hmm. And as information changes, it can be updated by the minute. That was not the case 30, 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. It would be updated, but not quite that quickly. Now, a good communication strategy, and anybody who has done this for a good amount of time, and especially if you are of color or a woman, I know, not excluding men, but I'm saying that we are probably heightened in sensitivity with this. If you've done this for a while, you cannot sit at the table and not think about who you are and who you represent through all of this. For instance, when I saw what happened in Texas yesterday evening, I have experience with a local school district, a very large one here in Atlanta. My first mind was not just with families, and the school was a team that has to cover that. Mm-hmm. Probably the next week or two or longer, there's a communications team that's going to have to cover that and cover the school district and cover the principal and guide that community. Mm-hmm. It takes a certain amount of sensitivity, cultural awareness, and also knowing this is a major tragedy. And so you got to be connected in order to not connect it socially to people, but connected to yourself and connected to the community to be able to be effective. Effective communications is generally authentic or based in authenticity. And so a tragedy like that, there has to be some authenticity involved with that. There has to be some compassion. Those words have to be spoken carefully. And before we get to even addressing a gun control lobby or any of that, note that conversation has to continue. I think we need just a day or two or more just to acknowledge the families. Mm-hmm. And effective communication or strategy is first remembering that moms and dads, there are 20 children and a teacher, I believe. I don't know if that's the final count, that won't be coming home. And, you know, the impact of that. I say that because we have spent the last 2 years grieving with COVID. When did we hit 1 million deaths a few weeks ago? So, and we are desensitized almost to that. It's 1 million people have. And so people who are like, who sit at the table, like I sit at the table, when we're writing, when we're advising, when we're talking to leadership, those components have to be inserted. And an organization, usually a good organization, will allow for that. We were talking, at least initially, about how culture is influenced by what we see. Now, yesterday's tragedy has impacted us right now. But earlier in the day, we were dealing with ice cream in Walmart. And profiting off of Juneteenth. Now, who was at the table when Walmart was deciding to make red velvet ice cream and put it out on the shelves for Juneteenth? Where did they get the idea that Juneteenth tastes like red velvet? So who's the test market? I don't, all the sales forecasting, Walmart, I don't know. That's not my, those not my people. My people are the ones, the marketing and the communications, the who put that cup together or the container with the red, black, and green and the flavors together, all of that. And who is marketing red velvet ice cream for Walmart? And why should they profit? Why should we allow them to profit off of the emancipation of slavery? So, okay, because it's become commercialized, you know that. And that was the, I am not here to have a political debate, at least on this, about President Biden making it a national holiday. I don't want to go into that direction. But what I will say, the, becoming a national holiday begins to then open the door for people to monetize from that.
Right.
And you just saw Walmart do it, but you also saw the community snap back. They yank, you know, wait, we don't want that. That doesn't represent us. Ice cream. And it falls into a stereotype.
Right.
That may not, what if I don't, I can't eat ice cream? What if I'm lactose intolerant? You know, especially the number of African Americans who are lactose intolerant and all of that, or don't eat dairy or are vegan for a reason. And all of the, there's a number of things going on there that seemed completely tone deaf. Now, those are my opinions, but I'm sure if I had a table of peers, we could say, no, that's not how you market that. But our culture right now is affected by that type of stuff. There's no, I won't say it's affected. I will say that our choices are affected by things like that. Mm-hmm. Literally, we are segmented. Our communities are segmented in marketing. And in that segment, we are, it is said, this is what they like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is what we're going to sell to them. So who's there to say, no, where are the polls and the test studies that say, nah, that doesn't sound right. That's insensitive. And honestly, that's probably why I would never be at that table. I don't think I could think about marketing Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to market that. I don't want to sell that. That's like, it's to me, there is a discomfort in that. Our ancestors were sold and enslaved. What are we making money from this, or allowing large corporations to make money off of us being free? And actually, was it like 2 years later? The real part of it is that when it was
Texas, it was got much it last, later. Yeah, yeah,
right.
It was much later.
So the celebration is not just that it ends; it's that the last people to hear about it 2 years later.
Yeah, was
there's
Texas
a discomfort in that. There's a misinformation mm-hmm. part mm-hmm. in that. There's a mm-hmm. there's something that's really uncomfortable to me. Mm-hmm. So while that's a personal opinion, the influence of that, you'll see the closer we get to Juneteenth, you'll see all kinds of stuff, sales. You'll see.
Yeah, you're right.
Just all kind of marketing
all
stuff.
Holidays
that's just
are
not,
commercialized. All,
right,
holidays.
All holidays.
And so
Dr.
why
King's
not, you know, why not profit from Juneteenth? That's what the thinking is, you know?
I agree. And that's the problem. So if there is going to be profiting, and we know that now, here's the other side of this, Ramona. Our culture and society is a economic base and a capitalist society. So any way there is to make money, there's going to be a lane for that. They're going to make a lane for that. And so we can't fuss but so much. Probably some of everything we do has a connection to something negative, or something that we, that Black people in particular, either created, developed, or were enslaved in doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we can't escape that. And that's a reality of our culture. But I think we can say, if you're at the Walmart table, hold on. Mm-hmm. This ice cream thing is not going to go right. What else can we do to celebrate? Can we bring some African-American vendors? There's a young lady that I think the counter to that was, a young lady in who's in Target with her ice cream line. So can we promote that? Mm-hmm. Can we promote some other stuff that celebrates accomplishments of Black people? Mm-hmm. See, the last part of this, and I'll wrap it up because I know we want to cover probably a couple other things, or at least one more thing, is the African-American community in particular, our culture was stripped when we were brought and enslaved,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or brought from Africa, or bought or sold, or however you want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't retain, that was stripped, and then it was told it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The culture.
We were wicked.
We were wicked people,
Jesus, right, and all of that stuff. And we needed to become Christians and all of the missionary work and all of that. Unlike maybe the Latino culture, Asian culture, they're able to retain their language here, retain their culture here, even with their hardships and much respect, but they've been able to retain that.
Some were stripped. Yeah,
okay.
Yep.
We haven't had that privilege. So the commercialization of that is almost a natural effect of not being able to retain it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's all, if you don't get to keep something, people can tell you what to do with it. They'll sell it and do whatever. So where does that put a communicator or a communications manager or a digital communications manager or someone just coming to the table and excited? you've got to become comfortable and work for people and work with organizations where you can say, hold on. And I think the millennials in particular, the generation under me, we weren't brought to the table like that. But they are able to speak about that and to talk about diversity and to say, hold on, we want to influence in a different way. And I think that is one of the better things that I have seen from this way that culture or communications is influencing culture or the media or what we see. Anytime your timeline on Facebook reflects what you've talked about all day, mm-hmm. make no mistake about it, you're being influenced. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When Siri hears what's happening in your house, and then your phone says it, and you want to then go to Wendy's or Burger King mm-hmm. or somewhere, that is an influence, and it's being done for free. Mm-hmm. You've given everybody permission to do it. Mm-hmm. Your phone has permission, your computer has permission, Siri has permission, and that information is sold. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of personal information is sold, and that's why your timeline reflects it.
Where do we go? Like people okay. who are in communications, how can we influence culture? How can we make an impact on culture? How do we influence people to move in the direction we want to go, which is forward? You know, we're not trying to okay. go backwards.
No. Well, number one, I think we've got to keep more people at that table. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I've got, not only when I'm there, I've got to make sure that when the new students graduate from J school or B school, mm-hmm. that they're sitting right next to me and I'm not holding that seat up.
Yep.
And I'm ready to listen. That's yep. the first thing. Okay. So we've got to be able to do that. Number two, we have to accept the fact that this is just what it is, and to a certain degree. It's intertwined in our culture. We were enslaved. So these are the outcomes. This is an outcome. It's the outcome of what has happened. Accepting that means once you accept something, then you have to work for the betterment. Part of this is that people don't really accept it. They're uncomfortable with it. They don't want to talk about it.
They don't accept what? What are you?
They don't accept. Well, first, it's uncomfortable. Slavery is an uncomfortable thing to talk about. So you've got folk at the table who don't even want to talk about it, don't want to acknowledge it. And then sometimes our younger group, they don't really know the history. Right. To know that maybe doing a thing a certain way is probably not the way to do that, because it's an insult to our culture. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I remember Nicki Minaj posting something about Malcolm X. It was kind of funny, but it was so inappropriate. Like, if you knew who this man was, you would
right, right.
Okay, girl, bye. Right, not you can be Nicki Minaj. You can be whoever you want to be, but don't do this to Malcolm X. You know, that's this shows a right, mm-hmm. and the there is an probably to some degree that is encouraged and overlooked in an industry,
right,
where
right,
that sensitivity is not pushed. Mm-hmm. So first, hire. Second, accept where we are, who we are in this country. Third, vote. Vote, 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 vote. That does matter. It does mm-hmm. matter. Vote. Reverend Warnock, dynamic. We are all familiar with him here in Atlanta. The first African-American Democratic senator. In Georgia, all of that matters. That is how media and culture get influenced, when those faces are in a place.
So true. I'm so proud of him. He's one of my classmates. So we've
okay.
been knowing
okay.
each other since we were freshmen in the Atlanta University Center.
Right.
And you're so right that the vote matters. We just had the primary
last night, yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday in Georgia, and that those faces matter because they influence the culture locally and nationally and internationally, because you get to see and hear their perspectives, and they influence change when they're in those positions. Right. So yes, voting matters.
Voting definitely matters. And I think there's some economic empowerment things that we have to address, because culture and communications, economics is in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Getting a seat at the table means that we need to be able to have money mm-hmm. in our community to buy the stuff that we need, mm-hmm. or to make money. And there's a bunch of different ways to see that, but economics plays a role, and economic parity plays a role in that. If my access is limited by the amount of money I have, you probably won't have a lot of access, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for the average person, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so we saw that as an example. Let me give you one. During COVID, everybody's child had a laptop. Remember, all the kids were learning at home. Mm-hmm. Well, what if even with laptops in the house, there is no Wi-Fi or stable Wi-Fi, right? Correct. And there are maybe three children, all school age. Mm-hmm. So then the children, we saw photos, they're at Taco Bell and Starbucks or whatever they could get. I remember the Taco Bell photo, wherever they could get free Wi-Fi to go to school. Now that was during an extreme time, but economic parity and plays a role in that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it plays a role in the messages we communicate.
So true.
So that's some of the thoughts. So voting, hiring, economic parity, being able to speak platforms like this where we're able to talk and not argue an issue, right? We're just going to talk about it and share our thoughts and have respected thoughts. Those type of things need to always be present. We might not change the ice cream at Walmart, but we can sure talk about it.
Yeah. And by talking about it, we can influence change because we can influence people's perspective about certain issues. Authenticity, empathy, and sensitivity are key to communication.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Without that, especially with some of the things we have experienced as a culture and in the world, I don't think you're effective if you're cold and not able to see the big picture. And sometimes it's not just the bottom line. It's my cousin down the street. It's my sister. It's the lady down at the church, you know? And that kind of stuff makes you pause sometimes. And I don't care what news channel is there. Sometimes that doesn't matter as much as is this a moment where we can exercise empathy and sensitivity before we get a rating or before we make the news or before we are first in the 20-minute news run, mm-hmm. Before we get coverage, before our brand gets recognized. And that has to be, if you're going to survive and be a voice in some large or small way for the community, you're going to have that and be comfortable with that at the table.
So Kamala, I know you're a big advocate for higher education, and I always like to ask my guests what would be their strategy to assist students to being successful in college. Could you tell us what school or schools did you attend? What were your major or majors and your degrees? And what strategy or strategies would you give students to ensure that they're successful in college?
Okay. I attended Florida A&M and Georgia State University. I have a degree in journalism. My concentration was public relations, and I have a minor in art history. I also have a master's degree from Northeastern University in Boston in organizational and corporate communication. My college career, though, was not traditional. I went to different schools and could not initially find my way after that failed freshman year. So I know what that feels like. A failed freshman year does not indicate a failure in life.
Say that.
Okay, so you can go on. I went on. Grades don't make who a person becomes. That's a small frame of your life. And if you're determined, open up the books or the online or whatever you got to do and get your work done and get it together. And maybe address what is happening that you're not able to get through college. Sometimes there's some other things that are happening that people have to address. So my strategy is, Ramona, I was adjunct at Georgia State. C's get degrees. C's get degrees. Now, I'm not telling anybody to be an underachiever, but usually when they hire and verify for your degree, at a certain point in your career, especially if you've excelled, they're not looking at your individual grades. They're just looking to see that you graduated. Now, I'm not saying be a failure, and I'm not saying just do the bare minimum. And you probably do need some strong grades, especially in some of these other programs. But down the line, who you become and who you've developed to be, if you're working to be the best of whatever that is, it'll be all right. The last part, let me squeeze this in. Everybody doesn't have to go to college. Mm-hmm. The man that's coming to fix this HVAC at the house, his college degree, he doesn't need that. He has technical training. Mm-hmm. That is just as needed and important. Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing we have to stop doing is thinking that everybody has to go to college. Economic parity can be attained without a college degree. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, not for everybody. I'm not good at fixing nothing, so I'm gonna have to go to college. I had to do that. But if there is something, the technician that changes my oil, all of those, they're doing just fine. And they were essential workers. Mm-hmm. They were working and making money. Mm-hmm. So let's not overestimate a college degree.
That's it. I love that advice. Failure your freshman year does not indicate failure in life. I'm so glad you shared your testimony, because a lot of people think when they don't do well their first year in college that they have to drop out. Mm-hmm. I've had students who failed their freshman year, and I was so proud of them that they came back, their sophomore year and tried again. C's get degrees. I love it. And my cousin once told me, after he dropped out of college, he told me, Ramona, college isn't for everyone. And I was kind of taken aback. And then I realized what he was saying. There are other ways to excel, like you just stated. There are all kind of professions that you don't need a college degree. There are all type of passions that you may have that don't necessarily ensure that you, it doesn't necessarily require you to have to go to college. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for those those strategies for college success. I know they're going to be valuable to some students.
I hope so.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.